produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, March 28th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your normal daily audio stash. You can always follow up on any of the stories we cover here on the Daily Audio Stash by visiting the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. We'll have links to the complete news stories, links to the websites of the people we interview, and links and downloads of all the music we play. Plus, you can comment and communicate with other fans of The Stash by leaving your opinions in our comments section. It's the news, it's the music, it's the interviews by, for, and about the cannabis community at the blog that only Normal can deliver. Your Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Friday is Cannabis Community Day here on The Stash, and coming up after the news, we're speaking with our good friend Steve Bloom, the webmaster at celebstoner.com. We'll be discussing the recent admission of past drug use by the new governor of New York and George W. Bush's recent pardons and commutations of a few drug offenders, as well as the latest celeb stoner elected by your votes, comedian George Carlin. Next, Cannabis Carry has unearthed a tune from a British Columbia group called the Tall Brothers. They've got a great little jazzy number called I'm Kinda High that will be a perfect beginning for your weekend. And since yesterday's audio stash came out a bit late in the day, I'm going to replay my interview with attorney Jeff Blackburn and his client, Tim Stevens, who was just acquitted of marijuana possession charges in Amarillo, Texas, thanks to Blackburn's use of the seldom-mentioned necessity defense. Finally, don't forget that every Saturday we're now posting the normal weekend music stash, where you can get all of the last 10 songs from our daily musical breaks in one podcast, suitable for your weekend party pleasure. If you have a band that you would like to have featured on our podcast, please send us an email at stash@normal.org. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Scapel Corby's clemency plea, a last hope. Now, this has been a very high-profile story down under in Australia. This young woman, Scapel Corby, appears to have been in the wrong place at the wrong time. While traveling through an Indonesian airport on her way to surf in Bali, she was nabbed with 4.1 kilograms of marijuana in her bodyboard bag. Corby has no prior record, has never been known to have been involved with marijuana or other drugs, and insists there was nothing in her bodyboard bag when she left Australia. She hardly fits the profile of a high-stakes marijuana smuggler, and her defense theorizes that she was the victim of a ring of airport baggage handlers who surreptitiously slip their packages into baggage in Australia, then it is retrieved by airport baggage handlers in Indonesia, who apparently missed Corby's delivery. Indonesia is renowned for its incredibly harsh drug laws, and it looks like she'll be spending the rest of her young adult years in prison. This is from the Australia Herald Sun. Indonesia's Supreme Court has rejected Skapel Corby's final appeal against her 20-year sentence for drug trafficking. It was her last legal avenue to have her sentence overturned. The only other avenue is a plea for clemency to Indonesia's president, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, which requires an admission of guilt. However, Mr. Yudhoyono has previously said he opposes granting pardons for drug crimes. Corby's lawyers also argued the sentence was too harsh compared with punishments handed down for similar offenses elsewhere in Indonesia. Oakland pot candy maker pleads guilty. The owner of an Oakland factory that produced marijuana candy with names like Buddafinger and Mr. Greenbud has pleaded guilty to conspiring to manufacture and distribute marijuana. Michael Martin, age 33, of El Sobrante, entered a guilty plea at a hearing Wednesday in U.S. District Court in Oakland. He is scheduled to be sentenced July 2nd by Judge Claudia Wilkin. Martin is the owner of Tainted Ink, which started as a boutique business that made chocolate truffles and grew into a large marijuana candy maker that bought chocolate by the ton, authorities said. When the federal government charged Tainted Ink's owner and employees in September, authorities said the company supplied the marijuana-laced candies to cannabis clubs in the Bay Area, Los Angeles, Seattle, Washington, Vancouver, British Columbia, and Amsterdam. Before surrendering to face the charges in October, Martin blasted the U.S. government for what he called an unfair attack by federal bullies on ailing patients who rely on medical marijuana. Martin said he joined the medical marijuana movement after seeing his father die painfully of prostate cancer in 2002 after a 10-year battle. His father refused to use marijuana because of a federal ban on all types of the drug. Martin said he uses medical marijuana to ease the pain after a fall left him with 7 screws and a steel plate in his left heel. He said he also has degenerative cartilage in his right knee. Well, the DEA loves to go after manufacturer of marijuana edibles. Note that Tainted Ink was only distributing to places where medical marijuana is legal under state law, like California and Washington State, or federal law, like Canada, or to the country where recreational use of marijuana is tolerated in the coffee shops, Amsterdam in the Netherlands. But to the DEA, this is a big headline where they can show pictures of marijuana and guns and cash on the evening news, along with the story about pot being made into candy. Of course, the intended inference is that the dreaded pot dealers are coming to hook your kids with pot candy, which of course ignores the fact that at every location where these candies were sold, one's ID is checked for age 18 or above, and in the medical dispensaries, a doctor's recommendation is also checked. But who's going to get in the way of a Reefer Madness headline for the DEA? Medical marijuana closer in New Jersey. Our allies at the Drug Policy Alliance are announcing the addition of new sponsors to medical marijuana legislation that will be introduced in the New Jersey State Assembly and Senate. Senator Sandra B. Cunningham, Senator Raymond J. Lesniak, and Senator Jim Whelan, who sits on the Health Committee where the bill will initially be heard, have all signed on to the measures. With Senator Nicholas P. Scutari as the prime sponsor in the Senate, these new additions make for a total of 4 sponsors in the New Jersey Senate and 7 in the New Jersey Assembly. As we build on this momentum, it is important to urge your local representatives and the members of the Assembly and Senate Health Committees to commit to the compassionate, common-sense response to suffering by sponsoring A804 and S119. The more sponsors we have on this legislation, the better chance we have of making medical marijuana a reality in New Jersey. Vermont rules narc copter search violates privacy. From the Burlington Free Press in Montpelier, Vermont. The Vermont Supreme Court today ruled that a helicopter surveillance of a man's property during a marijuana investigation violated his constitutional right to privacy that includes the airspace above a person's home and property. The case involved a man who was convicted of felony possession and cultivation of marijuana. In the 4-1 decision, the court concluded that the National Guard helicopter that flew over the man's property in the Goshen area to detect marijuana cultivation flew too low, at 100 feet above the ground for up to 30 minutes, and was, quote, an unreasonable intrusion of privacy that triggers constitutional protections, unquote. Gee, you think a half hour of a chopper hovering over your house might be a bit intrusive? Well, good work, Vermont Supreme Court. Now, if you could just apply the same logic of intrusion to forcing Vermonters to have to pee in front of a stranger to get a job. You know, what galls me about this story is the words National Guard helicopter. There are up to 1,500 Vermonters of its 4,000-strong National Guard that have served in Iraq and Afghanistan over the past 5 years. Now, regardless of how you feel about those wars, I can't imagine that those Vermonters in the Middle East, dealing with day-to-day equipment shortages, low manpower and resources, they can't feel too proud about their equipment being used back home to bust pot gardeners. Just how many Vermont tax dollars and National Guard manpower hours are being wasted to discover clandestine ganja grow sites?
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Marijuana dangerous. Don't legalize it. The Arizona Republic newspaper ran this story about medical marijuana and the push to decriminalize its use in Arizona by sick and debilitated people. While overwhelming majorities support medical marijuana, there's still some people who buy into the reefer madness. So I caught this one letter to the editor in the Arizona Republic newspaper.
Marijuana should not be legalized, and it is not medicine. It is a dangerous, addictive substance which can cause physical and mental health problems, traffic accidents, and can lead to worse addictions, such as heroin. If people want to cure cancer, they should look elsewhere and not try to legalize marijuana, even for such purposes.
Got it? Even if marijuana turns out to be the cure for cancer, it shouldn't be legalized because people might get addicted to heroin. Sorry, cancer patients, you're just going to have to die because we don't want there to be any traffic accidents. Here, have a beer instead. This is the mindset we're up against, so good luck, reformers.
Hi, I'm Rick Steves, and you're enjoying Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Please take a moment right now to support this organization by donating online.
Well, it's Cannabis Community Day here at the Stash, and like we do every Friday, we turn to the webmaster of celebstoner.com, Steve Bloom in New York City. Steve, welcome to the Stash.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing really good, and I've been checking out all the headlines out at Celeb Stoner, and it looks like a lot of the celebs that you've been blogging on lately are actually the political celebrities. We had the big issue with the governor of New York, Elliot Spitzer, stepping down in his prostitution scandal, who was then replaced by the lieutenant governor, Patterson, and he had some interesting comments when asked about his drug use, and I really liked your editorial on this. Let's talk a little bit about that New York governor and his admitting to using drugs in the past.
Well, it's gotten to the point of being pretty humorous here in New York State. You know, I mean, it's sort of it's sad, you know, what's happened to Spitzer, but nevertheless, you know, he's out and Patterson is in. And, you know, once Patterson came in, you know, the media started digging through his past and found that he had some dalliances, let's just say, with other women. He's married, and his wife had an affair. He said he had an affair after his wife, you know, sort of like a, you know, back and forth, you know, but of course that's sort of their own personal business, but this stuff does come out, and
well, it's like he did a preemptive strike here so it wouldn't come out in the news and be a big scandal.
Exactly. Patterson, you know, admitted because he just wanted to get it out there and move on. It's created, you know, huge headlines and tabloid papers here in New York, you know, for weeks now, you know, since the whole Spitzer revelation, and now, you know, Patterson, on top of everything else, you know, Patterson is blind, so you have, you know, all these things going on at once. And now the next step, this week, a reporter asked on the station New York One, which is a local news station here in New York for television, asked Patterson about his drug past, and you know, apparently, you know, Patterson had answered these questions before, but I guess as lieutenant governor, people didn't pay so much attention. Back 2 years ago, when Spitzer became governor and he was lieutenant governor, you know, he was asked questions about drug use, and he did admit to it, but again, it didn't get the national headlines that it got this week when he was asked about marijuana and cocaine. And in case of both, the governor said that he had, you know, used both, just like Obama, admitting to such. And he said that about cocaine, that he, when he was 22 or 23 years old, he tried it a few times. Now, Patterson is 53, so that would have been 1976, 1977. And about marijuana, he conceded a couple of times. He said, when I was 20, I don't think I touched marijuana since the 70s. Now, again, that would pinpoint it to about 1973. And then Patterson went on to offer, you know, sort of the standard politician's mea culpa that most people during that period of time tried a lot more than that and have gone on to lead responsible lives and hopefully have lived their lives to the fullest. So he was basically saying that in the 70s, this is kind of what people did, and he did a lot less than what a lot of other people did at that time, which is probably pretty accurate in a lot of ways, except for those people who may not have tried anything back then. But, you know, the 70s was that outgrowth period of the 60s. When you refer to the 70s, you're kind of like referring to the 60s in a sense. And I pin the editorial hiding behind the 70s, kind of questioning how politicians say, well, what we did then was okay, but if we did it now, it wouldn't be.
Right.
You know, why is it okay in the 70s to have done this stuff? Now, Arnold Schwarzenegger made the same comment last year. It's what it was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I've never touched it since. Yet they can basically say, hey, I did this with a wink and a nod in the 70s, like it was legal then, and now it's illegal.
Right. You know, when I saw that Patterson quote about, you know, I did like a lot of people did, but went on to lead a productive and fulfilling life, my thought was, yeah, because you didn't get caught.
Well, also, that's the good news, because, you know, that's kind of the point that a lot of people like ourselves like to say, that, you know, marijuana use, you know, and perhaps other drug, illegal drug use, is not, you know, any reason, you know, to suggest that you're not going to have a terrific life and career. You know, whether you do it now, then, before, later, in the future, it's not going to stop you from going places, you know, that, you know, if you follow the arguments, you know, of the Partnership for Drug-Free America and the Office for National Drug Control Policy, you know, these types of activities are going to leave you, you know, at the lower rung of society. It's going to sort of leave you on the couch, you know, watching television, smoking nonstop, apathetic, eating your bags of Doritos, all the stereotypes that they like to place, you know, at stoners. And, you know, the reality is that, you know, smoking a few joints, even if you did a little bit then, even if you continue to do now, of course the politicians most likely are not going to do it now. I mean, that would be the amazing revelation. That one of these politicians come out and say, listen, I still smoke pot a little bit today, so what?
Yeah, that would
that's
be amazing.
That's what I'd like to hear. Yeah, you know, that's what everybody did then. No, everybody's doing it now.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. And they get away with this hypocrisy of having done it in their youth and not getting caught and not doing anything to change the laws now for the kids that could be the future governors and the future senators.
Exactly. I mean, and sort of the point with Patterson, now New York State in 1977 decriminalized marijuana. So, you know, probably what Patterson did, well, in 73 was illegal, but let's just say he was smoking a little bit later. You know, okay, so it was decriminalized, so he wasn't doing anything particularly illegal maybe at that point. But in most states, you know, there are only 12 states in the country that decriminalized. In most states, you know, if you did that in the 70s, you know, when it was illegal, it remains illegal. Nothing has really changed. The policies, you know, hopefully, you know, the bill that Barney Frank, you know, is saying he's going to author, you know, and move through the House, which would decriminalize marijuana on a federal scale, that would change everything, of course. So, you know, it was that time when, you know, it was the first time when people were really experimenting with marijuana in a large scale. Time for the politicians to stop hiding behind the 70s.
Now, to go to the other popular feature on Celeb Stoner, of course, is the voting for the top celeb stoners, the top celebrities who either use or understand the cannabis issue better than others. And you got one of my favorites this week. Let's tell everyone who the latest celeb stoner is.
Well, the latest top celeb stoner that was voted by the readers of the website is George Carlin, the brilliant comedian who is, you know, he's sort of in the category of what we call the top celeb stoner or the celeb stoner legend. But the Slipstone of Legend is someone who's no longer with us. So that's Bob Marley and Jerry Garcia, Peter Tosh, people like that. Jimi Hendrix was originally voted, and that's going to be posted on the site shortly. But a top Slipstoner is, you know, generally, you know, somebody like Bill Maher, Woody Harrelson, Tommy Chong, Snoop Dogg, Willie Nelson, you know, some of the more commonly known advocates for marijuana in the celebrity world. And, you know, what we've done with the website is we ask the readers to select for us who they think is the next person that should be given this award. So George Carlin, who was nominated one time before and barely, you know, missed winning that time, was nominated, you know, another time. And so he won, you know, deservedly, of course. You know, for people who are not that familiar with Carlin, I mean, they probably should be. I mean, here's a guy who's 70 years old. He's turning 71 this year. He has been out there doing comedy since the late 60s. Right at that time, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, again, when I was growing up as like a high school and college student, there were just, you know, really three great comedians. It was George Carlin, Richard Pryor, and Robert Klein. They were the great three comedians. I mean, you'd have Rodney Dangerfield and stuff, guys like that who were of the older school, but yet the younger guys who came up, and they were not going to follow the same path as the older so-called Borschtfeld comedians, the guys who just did the one-liners about their wives and you know, their parents and things like that. You had these comedians who came along as the new, like, observational comics whose material wasn't really one-line jokes. They were kind of storylines that, you know, you'd follow. Really terrific bit on his album 1973, the Occupation Fool album called Grass Swept the Neighborhood. And George Carlin grew up in Harlem in New York. He remembers the time when, sort of in the 50s or around that time, when, you know, everybody just basically drank. And all of a sudden, marijuana became, you know, started sneaking into the neighborhood, and that's what he talks about, how his grass swept the neighborhood, and all of a sudden it kind of changed everything. All these years later, you know, he's done 13 HBO specials, he's been in a lot of movies. People may remember, you know, appearances in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Jersey Girl. He had his own TV show for a short while, the name George Carlin Show. He was the first host ever on Saturday Night Live. Also, I like to point out that his album in 1974, Toledo Window Box, is basically the term Toledo Window Box is really a term that he made up for, apparently, for a marijuana, you know, flower box that you put out on your ledge or whatever. And on the cover, he's wearing a T-shirt that has a window box, and it's a flower box, and it's got marijuana plants growing up. And then on the back of the album, the marijuana plants have been clipped off because, you know, they've been smoked.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty funny. So so George Carlin's been out there doing this for years. The readers of the site, I would guess, and I don't have demographics, but I would guess are fairly young. And it's, you know, it's sort of nice to know that they recognize somebody like him who's a veteran who's been out there doing this for years and that he's not forgotten and, you know, that they... You know, they chose the right guy.
Yeah, mad props to George Carlin for being selected as our latest Celeb Stoner at CelebStoner.com. And Steve, I want to thank you for joining us again like you do every Friday here on the podcast. And before we go, let's remind everybody about your book that's going to be dropping around 4:20.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life is my book co-written with Shirley Halperin. It's a marijuana dictionary / encyclopedia, pretty much everything you want to know about marijuana, but we're too stoned to ask. That's kind of our tagline for the book, and we're very excited. It's a 4:20 release, so it's available now through advance orders if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Powell Books.
We're hoping we can coordinate and maybe have one of our Pass the Stash contests and maybe have a couple of giveaways of the book as a prize for the
contest.
We'll just have to see how that works out.
We'll do that.
All right. Thanks, Steve, for joining us again. Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com.
Thanks a lot, Russ.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. we look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, time for our musical break, and what a delicious treat to take us into the weekend. Our British Columbia buds, the Tall Brothers, treat us to some righteous reefer jazz with their musical hit, I'm Kinda High. Actual brothers, Thomas and Bill Small, head this legendary Vancouver, British Columbia band. Bill at one time oversaw a mega real estate business, and the stress from that job led to ulcers. When he discovered that marijuana had cured his ulcers, he moved to Vancouver and helped launch the British Columbia Compassion Club Society that initially operated out of his apartment. This organization provides low-cost, high-quality, organic medicinal marijuana to anyone with a doctor's prescription. Tom has a long musical history, playing many different instruments in different musical genres and working as an audio engineer. Their retro sound is cool and crisp jazz at its best. After headlining the 2004 Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam, the Tall Brothers gained worldwide popularity in the cannabis communities far from their Canadian roots. These guys would kick ass even if they weren't singing about weed. Please visit their MySpace page to sample and download this hip music. You can get the link on our blog, stash.normal.org. This is the Tall Brothers, and I'm Kinda High.
I'm kinda high, let me excuse myself. But it seems like it's just moments since we met. I'm kinda high, let me introduce myself. Did we meet before, or am I just kinda high? If you think it a little strange, dear, take a puff on this and then you'll dig my sweet refrain, girl, when I sing it again. I'm kinda high, let me excuse myself. But it seems like it's just moments since we met. I'm kinda high, let me introduce myself. Did we meet before, or am I just kinda high? It's just moments since we met. I'm kinda high, let me introduce myself. Did we meet before, or am I just kinda high? If you think it a little strange, dear, take a puff on this and then you'll dig my sweet refrain, girl, when I sing it again. I'm kinda high, let me excuse myself. But but it seems like it's just moments since we met. I'm kinda high, let me introduce myself. Did we meet before, or am I just kinda high? Did we meet before, or am I just kinda high? Did we meet before, or am I just kinda high?
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than a half million Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
There was a very important court case handed down in Texas on Tuesday where a medical marijuana patient was able to use a necessity defense in order to avoid prosecution under Texas anti-marijuana laws. And I'm joined today by the attorney who successfully defended that case, Jeff Blackburn from Amarillo, Texas. You may remember him as the attorney who defended the African Americans wrongly convicted and rounded up in Tulia, Texas on drug charges. He's the founder of the Innocence Project of Texas and also an attorney on the Normal Legal Committee. He's also on speakerphone with his client, Tim Stevens, age 53 of Amarillo, who was the defendant in this case, prosecuted for holding a very small amount of marijuana, which he uses to treat his HIV-positive status. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks a lot for having us. Sure.
Now, Tim, apparently the situation that we're dealing with here in Texas is a medical marijuana defense. Of course, Texas doesn't have a medical marijuana law like 12 other states do. So could you just tell our listeners in brief what you were facing and what the case was concerning?
Yes. Well, firstly, I'm a 53-year-old with no previous criminal history. I'm HIV positive, have been for 20 years. I'm a non-progressor, as they call it. But I do have symptoms, even though I don't have haven't progressed or whatever to the full AIDS category. And my malady that I suffer is called cyclic vomiting syndrome, which happens not only with HIV patients, but with chemo, MS, and other patients. Whereas sometimes for days, sometimes even weeks, is chronic. There's nothing but chronic vomiting, and it can be life-threatening in the sense of if it's prolonged, people have been known, it's not abnormal for people to have bled to death via this syndrome.
Well, that sounds like a very, very difficult condition to live with.
It totally changes your life.
Now, had you been seeing doctors for this condition, and did they try to help you with any sort of pharmaceutical prescriptions, and did that work out?
I've been through the gamut of every medical prescription possible that way, with the exception of Marinol, which typically does not work for this because once you have the prodrome, I believe they call it, the sense that the onset of this cycle of vomiting is getting ready to begin, nothing will stay down. So,
right.
Besides that, I've been prescribed everything possible.
Yeah, I've always thought it was a bit strange to tell someone that was suffering from chronic vomiting that they needed to swallow a pill.
Well, it doesn't work.
Seems quite counterintuitive. So the only treatment then that has been valuable for controlling this in your case has been the medical use of cannabis. Of course, now this opens you up to prosecution in the state of Texas, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Now, you were caught by the Texas authorities. I understand. I'm not exactly sure of the details of the case, which if it was county or state. But what was the amount you were caught with?
$10 worth, 3 grams.
Three grams of marijuana. Okay. Well, let's turn to Jeff now, who's the attorney who defended Tim in this case. And Jeff, what was Tim facing here as far as punishment from the Texas? You know, it's always said the Texas criminal justice system is pretty harsh. What was he facing?
You know, our motto down here is doing our best to keep up with Mississippi.
Okay.
And so far, we've done a hell of a job at it. The punishment for a Class B misdemeanor marijuana possession is up to 6 months in jail and a $2,000 fine.
Hmm. And, of course, if he's locked up in jail, he's not going to have the cannabis to take care of the chronic vomiting should it reoccur.
Pretty severe penalty, and Texas has absolutely no formal or legal exception like New Mexico and like 12 other or 11 other states besides New Mexico do. So what we really did was we took a very old doctrine under the law, that a law that I don't seem to have seen used very much in cases like this, called the necessity doctrine. And what it says is very interesting, because it says that it's up to a jury to decide whether somebody broke the law, but also whether they were justified in breaking the law, because the imminent harm that they were looking at was so bad that it outweighed the legislative perception of harm that caused them to write the statute. Legal mumbo-jumbo, but here's the bottom line. A jury in Texas can decide what they really think of the marijuana law, and they can decide whether it ought to give way when you're dealing with somebody like Tim, who was clearly facing imminent harm that day. That's why this verdict, I think, is ultimately so important. As far as we know, it's the only trial verdict rendered on these grounds in the state ever. And it's a real good temperature reading of, I think, where people are really at. We're in a very conservative part of a very conservative state, yet the jurors here stood up to the government, relied on this old law, reached back into the past to come up with a decision that I think will and can affect the future of all Texas.
I would think not only Texas, but we could look at other states that might have this same sort of necessity defense.
Absolutely. We are, there are going to be cases where it will work, where it's really applicable.
And when I was reading the reports here, it said it didn't take the jurors very long to come to that decision either.
We tried the case for nearly 12 hours, and it took them 11 minutes to come up with a not guilty.
Wow, 11 minutes. That's amazing. And now, I imagine, of course, you had a lot of opposition in this case from the prosecutors and maybe even from some of the anti-drug zealots there in Texas. What were some of the things they were trying in the case or in the media to try to sway the jurors their way?
Well, I'll tell you something. It wasn't a high-visibility case beforehand, before the trial. We frankly didn't want it that way because I wanted these jurors to know that they were not. But I wanted to really defuse the argument that the state would make that this was about something symbolic or big. The truth is, it was about one guy and one law and one situation. And I'm not saying it doesn't have value beyond our immediate situation, but that's what the jurors needed to focus on.
Right.
And I think that that's why we can say that that turned out to be a good tactic, because as it turns out, they did just focus on our immediate situation. There wasn't a media controversy about it. What there was, though, was a really hotly contested trial, and frankly, they were just law enforcement robots run amok. Basic message was what you would expect. The law is sort of the Judge Dredd approach to the law. You know, the law is the law is the law, that kind of thing. Sort of a Sylvester Stallone-like attitude.
Right.
No exceptions. Nobody gets off. Marijuana is an evil, dangerous narcotic. That stuff went over like a lead balloon with these jurors. I'd say the consensus of everybody that showed up for jury duty that day was pretty much, what's the big deal here?
Right.
That's why this case is so important, too. It illustrates how far ahead the people are from the authorities right now. I mean, average people, you know, none of these people are marijuana users, but they're regular people, and they have a heart, and they have some compassion, and I think they've got an open mind. They're way ahead of what the local police and the prosecutors are.
Now, how does this this decision now affect the rest of Tim's life as far as his use of cannabis? Are they going to continue to try to prosecute him, or does this just pretty much keep him safe from the authorities for the foreseeable future?
Well, not really. I mean, it's not going to keep him safe from them. It's going to be up to them. If they want to prosecute him, persecute him, follow him and arrest him, and really prove what jerks they are, then this would be a great opportunity. Maybe they'll do better than that. But I have learned not to expect much from government.
Well said, well said. That just illustrates the need for the activists in Texas to stand up and start fighting for a medical marijuana law in the Lone Star State. We need to protect the people like Tim who are using marijuana merely just to stay alive, just to have a quality of life.
Exactly. And I'll tell you something else, too. I mean, Tim has really educated me on how many, many people, not just Tim, but also the doctor that we had, which is a brilliant, great man named Steve Jennison, who's the director of the medical marijuana program in New Mexico, who testified for us as an expert. Steve and Tim have educated me about how many people all over the country are exposed to totally needless suffering, many times very, very horribly painful suffering, because of these stupid, arcane prohibitions that we still have in place. And I also would like to think that if in Texas more people start getting more lawyers that will stand up and fight these cases, I think we'll see a bigger and bigger trend that might catch the attention of the legislature. It's damn sure about time.
Yeah, it's time for the tide to turn on this. And like you said, the public is way ahead of the authorities and the elected officials on this issue. So I want to remind everyone that you can continue to make a difference by checking out the story on this. It's at stash.normal.org. We've got links to all of the relevant facts of the case. And also, just remember that you can make a difference by calling your legislators and making your opinions known about this. Let them know about the Tim Stevens case and that others like him need the protection of medical marijuana laws in your state. Jeff and Tim, I want to thank you very much for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much for having us. I couldn't ask for a better podcast to be part of.
Well, thank you very much. And Tim, good luck to you, and we hope you stay safe from the authorities down there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with our cannabis quote from the late William F. Buckley Jr., the conservative writer and founder of the National Review. Quote, "The anti-marijuana campaign is a cancerous tissue of lies, undermining law enforcement, aggravating the drug problem, depriving the sick of needed help, and suckering well-intentioned conservatives and countless frightened parents." End quote. Well, that's absolutely true. The anti-marijuana campaign is a cancerous tissue of lies, and we hope we can count on your support to help us to fight this adult marijuana prohibition. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the adult use of marijuana. And take care of each other, tokers.